from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome in to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday evening alongside my good friend and friend of the radio station and contributor to the Nashville Predators Radio Network, Jeremy K for Knowledge Gover. Jeremy, how in the world are you?
Porth, I feel like I'm on another side of the world because I can't see anybody that I would normally see around this time of year. I hope you're doing all right, buddy. And, I'm just, we're getting on as best we can.
So let me start with this. We're going to do a lot of reflection in this show, as this week is essentially the 3-year anniversary of the two biggest wins in Preds franchise history, games 5 and 6 against the Anaheim Ducks in the Western Conference Final. But before we get to that, this is your last season being a media member, and it came to a screeching halt 2 months ago. I have to think that was just a sledgehammer upside the head, and knowing that there's probably not going to be another locker room scrum before the end of this season, that's got to be tough.
I'll do you one better.
Okay.
March 5th was the 2-0 win over the Dallas Stars at home. It was a Thursday night.
Yes.
And I left the arena, just like you said, thinking, well, hey, we got, I don't know what it is, 6 more home games or whatever it is. And that ended up being the last home game that I got to cover if the season does not resume in any kind of normalcy, right? And trust me, if it does resume in like Vegas or Florida or wherever the season resumes, if I can get credentialed, I'm going because it's my last hurrah. So I'm definitely going. But that's not on the table yet. So let's just leave it at March 5th, Thursday night, 2-0 win. Chase McCabe is baiting me into going to the players' buffet table at the end of the season because what are they going to do? Fire me? That kind of thing. And outside the locker room, and so we're having a good time. But I never once thought this is the last time I'll do this.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where the one better kicks in. That was a week from when I was supposed to fly to Toronto and be in studio with NHL Network on Sirius XM.
Oh,
being in studio guest for that and be able to cover a game in Toronto for the first time, actually be in Toronto for the first time. I mean, it was a week away from that. And that got ripped out from under me, I think around the 11th, the 10th or 11th of the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to cancel my flight and all that due to concerns with my family. And it's a good thing because I may have been stuck there for a long, long time.
No kidding.
So I didn't get a chance to do that either. I had set that trip up for probably months. Worked out, again, being in studio guests and all that, kind of a bucket list item. I was like, well, what can I do within reason? I can do that. So I'll go do that. And they were like, yes, please come on in studio. And now I never got a chance to do that either. So now, again, I understand the people out there that are listening. Some people are going through way more important things. They've maybe even lost family members or friends. And so I don't want to come off like I'm complaining, but you are right that from my perspective and angle of this whole thing is this was supposed to be my last, like, hey, shake everybody's hand, give everybody a hug and say, thank you so much for 10 great years. I'm bowing out. And I don't, at least at this point, I don't get to do that. And so it is very sad.
It is very sad. I didn't bring it up to pour salt in the wound at all. I mean,
no, not at all.
Definitely been weird times, and I have had you on the mind multiple times here in the last couple months, knowing that there isn't hockey and there isn't hockey for Gover to report on, and what is his final season as a media member. So
I do appreciate your thoughts. The biggest compliment for me, honestly, is when people usually on Twitter reach out unbeknownst. It's not warranted in any way. they just reach out and they go, hey, I thought of you today. I can't believe this is going to be your last season. I guess you'll have to come back for one more.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest compliment for me, because I'm not mentioning it. They're just bringing it up on their own. And it makes me feel really good that I really appreciate it. And it makes me feel like people actually read my stuff.
Well,
when it was all said and done.
So. Well, we always read your stuff, Gover.
I know you do, Port. Thank you.
So one of the shining moments of your media career was obviously the 2017 postseason, which the Nashville Predators advanced all the way to the Stanley Cup Final, faced the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Preds do so in dramatic fashion in Game 6 against the Anaheim Ducks. We're going to be chronicling that night in that postseason run coming up Friday at noon with Game 6 remastered. Just to explain it a little bit, it's essentially taking exclusive interviews with Ryan Johansson, Colton Sissons, Austin Watson, David Poile, Sean Henry, all conducted by Willie Donick, Darren McFarland, and Chase McCabe, and also taking the play-by-play and kind of meshing it all together in 1 2-hour special. And that's going to be Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. So hopefully if you're listening to this, you can also listen Friday at noon. But it's been a time, a quarantine period, where there's been a lot of reflection. And there has been a lot of reflection, especially with Fox Sports Tennessee playing all the victories from that postseason. A lot of reflection on that postseason and the Predators having just a magical run to the Stanley Cup Final. And I guess that's a long-winded way of me getting around to asking you, Gover, how will you always remember that spring in Smashville?
Yeah, fondly. You want one word. You know, it was really emotional, actually, because I think it was like a month and a half after the Stanley Cup Final loss. I was just looking through my pictures on my phone. You know, just I don't know what I was trying to. I was trying to find a picture of my son, or I don't know something random, and I came across the picture of Justin Bradford, Chris Bartel, and myself at center ice after the Penguins celebration of Game 6 in Nashville, and I just started bawling. And it was because it wasn't because the Preds lost or anything like that, right? We're media members, so we try to be as impartial as possible. But it was the realization after all the emotion had been taken out of it, you know, because again, you're about a month and a half removed or so, so you're not going to the rink every day and trying to come up with a story and like trying to talk to this player and cut in front of this guy so you can get a quote from Frederick Goudreau, you know, and all that. So you're not in all the hullabaloo. That's easy for me to say. In all that craziness, you actually had time to separate. And so all those emotions came flooding back, and I just started bawling because I remember thinking – and remember, I wasn't planning on retiring yet. I remember thinking, I don't know if I'll ever get another chance to do that. Like, that ride was so special because, one, it was so unexpected. Obviously, they were the 16th, the last team in to the playoff picture – excuse me, and they went all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. So it was unexpected. But on top of that, it was real. Every year, 31 teams go all the way to wherever they go and their final record and all that. But only one of those 30 teams can call itself a champion. The other 29 seasons end in disappointment at some level. And they were one of the last two teams standing. And I was a media member for that run. And so to experience that, even at my short, small stature, was so magical and so wonderful and so rare that I didn't know if I'd ever do. And now, of course, now I know I'm retiring, so it won't happen. But unless it happens this year, of course. But, you know, I didn't know if I'd ever get a chance to do that again. And that all just came out. Like, here I am posing with friends right after this moment. And the team that I cover went all the way, except for they fell two games short, maybe even two bad calls short. It was pretty emotional. So I think it's a long-winded answer, just basically saying that I fondly look back at that time. It was so great if you got to be a part of that as a fan or whatever. If you were on board for the whole thing, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just so rare. I mean, ask the Vancouver Canucks, ask the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, you know, ask those franchises. They have never won a cup before. And they're 40, 50 years old, you know? And so here the Predators were, I think, in their 19th season, 20th season. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was 19th season. And they were able to do that ride, and they were able to go through that grind, and where every game truly mattered, and guys are putting themselves on the line. Fans are pulling out all the stops to, you know, take in these double overtime games and rush home from work early so they can change, get the kids and head to the rink and go to viewing parties at places. It was so special because it was so rare. I guess that's the best way to say it.
And it wasn't scripted.
Like, right.
Everything about from mid-April to mid-June of that playoff run was spontaneous. The crowds on Broadway, everything from that to something as small as a song inside an arena after every win, which was glorious, becoming like an anthem. Not as big in Nashville as, you know, Gloria was in St. Louis last spring, but, you know, every little detail about that run was just, it was spontaneous, and it was just reacting to this team that this city wrapped its arms around. And when you think back 3 years later, at least for me, Gover, and I would assume you might feel the same way, is that at least for me, I have more appreciation for what we lived through for those 2 months than maybe we even realized in the moment, because you're in the moment. You're in the moment. It's, you know, every single day you're taking it day by day. You're taking it moment by moment. And you even look on the following postseason where they were the President's Trophy winners and they go up against Winnipeg in round two and you just think it's snap of a finger going to happen again. And they lose in game seven that year. Then they lose to Dallas in round one last year. And you sit back and reflect on how special and how spontaneous that playoff run was. And at least for me, I have more of an appreciation for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, again, you never know when you're going to be able to do that again. Players, players from any sport and any walk of life, right, who went to a championship or a Super Bowl or a World Series, whatever it is, early in their career, right? Years one, two, and three, right, of their career. You ask any of those, and they will almost every time, they will tell you, yeah, we just thought we were going to go back the next year and do it again. Because they got that success so early that they didn't really truly understand how hard it was in a manner of speaking. And so you're right. I mean, it's you when you're in the moment, again, like from our perspective, you're getting in the locker room, you're trying to get any one-on-one interview you can because there's 50,000 people in this small locker room trying to get to Rene and Roman Josi and all that. And so you're trying to get to anybody you can just to get 2 or 3 minutes with them for the broadcast. And then you're trying to get a quote from somebody about a story you're working on, or you got to go to the rink for morning skate. And all that doesn't become a grind anymore because you're right, you're in the moment. You're not thinking about, man, is this game 71 or 61? I can't remember which one this game this is. Okay, is it April yet? Like, you don't think about that. It's just, yeah, I mean, you live by the next game. And so you're not really thinking about all that. You're in the moment too much. You're in the zone. And you don't really think about it. And so you're removed now by 2.5 years, 2 years, whatever it is. Well, 3 years, I guess. And you look back and you're like, wow, like I would give just about anything to do that again.
Well, you mention how there's 50,000 people in the locker room. Well, there's literally 50,000 people outside the arena partying as all that's happening. And that was such a huge storyline within that postseason, especially nationally, because that was really the spring where the Preds fully found themselves on the map. Yes, the All-Star game was an amazing weekend here in Nashville, and it had a lot of media members raving about this city as a hockey town. And later that spring, Mike Fisher, triple overtime winner. But that wasn't a national sensation like the Stanley Cup final and even the Western Conference final with everybody in Hall of Fame Park across the street watching on a Jumbotron. And you couldn't get a ticket to get inside Bridgestone Arena in that run. It was the hottest ticket in town. And, you know, those are the moments that we didn't always live through that, you know, if it happens again, I think we will wish we lived through.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, again, spontaneity is a great word you used earlier, you know, because those things were spontaneous. Nobody's like, okay, guys, look, the Preds might make the final, so let's go ahead and block off Broadway because there's going to be 100,000 fans. Nobody thought that. It just happened. They set up screens for, like, the honky-tonk jumpers, you know, down to Lower Broadway, and then all of a sudden they had the crowd control, and they kind of got a sense of what it was going to be, and then all of a sudden it's all the way up to the Barbershop Harmony Society headquarters on 7th Avenue. And it's just unbelievable what happened, the scene, the photos. It's got to be, honestly, it's a photojournalist's dream to be able to capture a moment like that that's so unexpected but so positive. And I think that it was a really great thing for our city, and it's something to kind of wrap ourselves in right now when we can't really go out and do a whole lot. There's no sports to partake in right now, except for maybe the NASCAR thing the other day. You know, and I'm watching reruns of bowling on TV.
That's when you know it's getting bad.
I know there's bigger fish to fry, but I mean, you know, I mean, those are the kind of memories that we can wrap ourselves in.
I'd rather listen to Pete Weber than watch Pete Weber bowl.
Well, there's no argument for me here. So it's just, you know, it was just so great. And so, I mean, that's the thing. That's another piece of this whole thing too, right? You asked me what I remember from it. I've named about five or six different things. You've named three or four different things. So here we have, like, and I'm sure everyone listening right now has got their own thing.
Yeah.
That's how spectacular it was. Everybody kind of came away with their own set of memories. And I think that's what makes it so special.
Coming up next here on Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. We will continue the conversation surrounding the 2017 postseason and look specifically at Game 6 against the Ducks. That's all coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. And the pinnacle night of that entire run was them winning the West. May 22nd, 2017, Game 6 at home. And you think of what they went through in a 48-hour period before that game, and I still scratch my head wondering how they won games 5 and 6 against the Anaheim Ducks. You didn't have Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher. You didn't have Kevin Fiala and Craig Smith from injuries that occurred earlier in the postseason. So you're down more than just one offensive line and potent forwards at that. You've got Colton Sissons on the first line. You've got alongside Pontus Aberg, or is it Aberg? And they find a way to win Game 5 in Anaheim, which I would contest, Gover, that was the biggest character win in franchise history with what they were facing on the road in Anaheim. They were trailing in that game and found a way to scratch and claw and come away victorious. And then you turn around and the scene at the airport was unbelievable when they landed back that Sunday afternoon. And then, you know, Game 6 speaks for itself.
I think I'll disagree with you. Well, no, I guess I won't. You're right. Game 5, I think, was the biggest character win. I was going to argue Game 6 because of everything surrounding it. But I would give the Preds the slight edge because it was home ice. I would give them the slight edge because they were up in the series. All they needed to do was win one. Anaheim has the pressure of winning two, right? So I think you're right. I think Game 5 was probably the biggest character win in the history of the franchise. To me, and there's nothing here against Colton Sissons at all. I think Colton Sissons is a tremendous player. And I constantly go to, well, when the world is normal, I constantly go to bat for him on Twitter when people are like, Colton Sissons is not important. He's super important to this team. So, and I'm glad he's locked up for the amount that he's locked up for the Predators for the long term, because he deserves to be here. He's given everything for this team. And but my point, though, is that when he's your top line center, there's an issue, right? He's a Marcel Gotch 2.0. You can put him wherever he wants and he'll be serviceable, but he doesn't belong in the top. He doesn't belong in the top line. So it's for him to have the game of his life, have a hat trick and propel this team into the Stanley Cup final. When Ryan Johansson's on the sideline, Kevin Fiala's on the sideline. You know, you got guys in the lineup like Cody McLeod, Vern Fiddler. And I mean, that team should not have been in the Stanley Cup final, yet they gave Pittsburgh everything they could handle and then some, and had to get help, I still believe, from two really horrible calls, I'll even say three, for Pittsburgh to win that series. Now, would Pittsburgh have won it in seven games? Yeah, maybe. I mean, they're a more seasoned team, been there before, et cetera. But I still believe that with Ryan Johansson in that lineup, in the Stanley Cup final lineup, this team beats Pittsburgh at some point. So they to overcome all of that, get to the final with Colton Sissons as your top line center. I mean, it was fate. It was going to happen. We just didn't know it.
There was definitely a destiny feel to that team. I mean, when they needed a big play, they got one, and that luck ran out in games 5 and 6 against the Penguins. But when the chips were on the table and they needed a big play, they got it. Kevin Fiala, game 3 against Chicago, even earlier in that night where Philip Forsberg scores 2 goals in the third period to force overtime. When they needed a game-winning play, a big play from Ryan Johansson in game 6 against the Blues, they got it. When they needed their unsung heroes to step up against the Anaheim Ducks, they got it. And it you know, there's such a randomness in the Stanley Cup playoffs where it's become so unpredictable, where you have the Blues going from the worst team in the National Hockey League to winning the Stanley Cup. You have the Preds doing what they did in 2017, being the last team in. We've heard all the stories about the LA Kings over the years winning a pair of Stanley Cups, where the regular season Kings looked nothing like a Stanley Cup champion. And there's just something truly special and unique about the Stanley Cup playoffs when you go on a long run like that, where it's a different guy every night, and it was truly that way for the Preds that entire spring.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to even follow up with that. I mean, you said it so succinctly and perfectly that I would just be clouding the airwaves with noise.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
So when you look at that Game 6 against the Anaheim Ducks, and again, Game 6 remastered Friday at noon. If you're a Preds fan, you want to hear it. It's as in-depth of a look back on that game as you'll find. When you think of that game and that night in Nashville, I mean, that's got to be one of the greatest sporting events, if not the top sporting event to take place in this city, right?
It was probably the best sporting night, I would say, because the Titans didn't win the Super Bowl. Yeah, you know, when they were 1 yard short, unfortunately. I think it was the best sporting night because of everything involved in it. Again, the scene at Hall of Fame, Walk of Fame Park, and you know, and then of course downtown. And again, the unexpectedness of it. We talked about it earlier. When you're number one in your division, in your conference, and maybe even in the league, and you win the President's Trophy, and you go all the way to Stanley Cup final, and you win. I'm not taking anything away from that experience because you're still winning. You still got to go through a grind to win that. But there's a level of like, well, they're a good team. They were good enough. We saw it coming a mile away, whatever it was. But in this particular case, they were the last team to get in, and they overcame all these obstacles. They never started a series at home. I mean, all this stuff. And so for them to be – and then the massive loss of man games, and then who those players were, you know,
mm-hmm.
that got lost to in action to injury. So everything about it was a perfect storm of just jubilation and disbelief. And I would say, I would argue that there's a lot of people that don't like bandwagon fans in any sport, and that's fine. But when you're in a non-traditional market like Nashville and you have a level of success, there comes a following with that. You get to introduce people to the game that way. And that's, I think, that one moment of winning game 6 and going to the Stanley Cup final, I think converted more on-the-fence sports fans to pay attention to hockey than any moment ever before, including being granted a team to begin with. And I think that speaks a lot for where the Predators are, where they've been, and where they're going. So, I mean, yeah, I think Game 6, it was probably the greatest achievement in this franchise's history.
Well, and coming up next here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover this evening. Gover has referenced a couple times the two calls in the Cup final that did not go the Predators' way after the Predators had all sorts of breaks go their way in the first 3 rounds. Would you rather have the offsides call in game 1 or the Sissons no goal in game six reversed, which one would you rather go back in time and get a do-over for? We'll have that conversation coming up next on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National
Welcome
app.
Back into the show, Preds Insiders on this Monday evening. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. They are now back open down there in Cool Springs, so check them out. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. Jeremy K. Gover joining me here on Preds Insiders. This evening, we are walking down memory lane of the 2017 postseason for the Nashville Predators. This Friday is the three-year anniversary of Game 6 against the Ducks. And as a reminder, Game 6 remastered Friday at noon. If you're a Preds fan, you are going to want to check it out. Now, one thing, Gover, that we haven't really reflected on is round four. We went through the first three rounds of the 2017 postseason, but we have not really taken a look at the Stanley Cup final between the Preds and Penguins. And look, you said earlier that if the Predators had Ryan Johansson, that they would have had a much better chance of winning the Stanley Cup. And I agree with that statement. I'm not going to go as far as to say that they will have won the Stanley Cup. They got their butt kicked pretty good in games two and five of that series, outplayed heavily, especially game five. And, you know, they could have used Ryan Johansson in games one or six. And look, we'll never know. We will never know what will have happened if 92 was in the lineup for the Nashville Predators. But, you know, two plays stick out like a sore thumb in that series that if they had gone the Predators' way, just like the Predators got almost every call go their way in the first three rounds, if they get the offsides call to go their way on the goal review to open up game one in Pittsburgh, if they get the Sissons goal to count and there's not an early whistle in the second period of game six, I'd be interested to see how that series goes. So, Gover, if I had to give you a choice to go back and change one of those moments against Pittsburgh, the offsides call in game one where Philip Forsberg's skate was apparently off the ice, I don't see it that way, but for whatever reason, the NHL overturned the goal by PK Subban because of Philip Forsberg's skate being allegedly off the ice. Or the game six moment where Colton Sisson scores, but the ref lost sight of the puck, blew the whistle, or had the intent to blow, and that goal did not count. The game remained tied 0-0, and the Penguins end up winning 2-0 in that game. Which moment of those two would you want to go back and reverse?
So when a referee loses sight of a puck, it's blown dead, right? That's been a rule since I was an official at adult rec leagues like 15, 20 years ago. So that's been an institute a long time. That's a bad break. Sissons definitely did score, and the referee was out of position, but those things happen in a game. Forsberg, his skate, it was called a goal, first of all, for those who don't remember, it was called a goal on the ice.
By PK Subban.
Right, by PK Subban, on the ensuing play, by PK Subban. They then went back and reviewed it, and you're supposed to have indisputable evidence that to overturn a call. And as you said, you don't believe that it was allegedly offside. So that gives you enough reason right there. Not you, but I mean you as the general public, enough reason right there to say, hey, if one person thinks his skate is on the ice and the other person thinks it's off the ice, that's not indisputable evidence. That's two completely different opinions, and we have to go with the call on the ice that needs to stand, and that should have been a goal. Also, I will throw another log on that fire, saying that they recently changed that rule to count the – and I apologize for my dog playing in the background. this is the qualms that we have when we do these virtual things. When they've changed that rule now to where the blue line is a plane, like a football – like an end zone line – goal line end zone, you know, that's a plane. If you, the ball breaks the plane, it counts. It's a touchdown. Well, this, now it's the same thing. So I think that in and of itself tells you all you need to know about which one I would choose. If we got a rule change based on one of them, then I think that's it. And I say that because of this, Porth. We all know momentum, whatever, I don't care what any coach speak says, momentum is a big, big factor when it comes to sports. The Predators would have been up 1-0 in that game on the road. And then if that goal score, and then after that goal was disallowed, the Predators, I don't know, do you remember what the number was, Porth? I think it was like 32 minutes or 28 minutes or whatever the number was, where they did not allow a single shot on goal.
It was close. Like, I think it was 40 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. So
late first to late third.
It was the entire second period. I know that. So the entire second period, Pittsburgh didn't get a single shot on goal. And that was after that play. So think about that for a second. They score that goal. They're up 1-0. And then they don't allow a single shot on goal until the third period. It changes the entire complexity of the game. The entire complexity. And so I would rather have Forsberg's goal, Subban's goal based on Forsberg's skate count than I would Colton Sisson's goal in game six count, because I believe it would have meant a different kind of series. Now, that different kind of series, as we all know, it's all human element, right? So that could have done a domino effect to have Pittsburgh win in five or whatever. But however, but that's, if I had to go back and choose, that's the one I would choose.
It's
Subban goal. I would count that
one. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum.
I knew you would be.
I knew it. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum here, because that happened so early in the series, the first period of the first game. And yes, the Predators,
but they lost that game, Port. They lost that game, and I believe they would not have if that goal counts.
I tend to side with you on that statement that you just made right there. If that goal stands, the way they had won games, the game ones in the first three rounds of the postseason, it felt like it was going to be yet another game one where they go on the road and they find a way to win. However, there is still so much time left in that game and the series alone. If you go back and switch the Sissons play and that goal stands, with as hard as the goals were to come by in game six, I mean, Patrick Hornquist's game-winning goal for the Cup happens with, 90 seconds left, and it's a bad bounce off the glass behind Pecorine, and he deflects it in. You know, if Sissons scores that goal, then you have a lead in game six. Who's to say the momentum of the team and that building doesn't get them a second goal to make it 2-0 Preds? Then you've got one game to win it all.
Even if the rest of the game goes as it did, they still win 1-0 and they force a game seven. What you're leaving out, though, is Rene's performance in Pittsburgh that series, except for which game? Game one, and where I would have taken Subban's goal.
I mean, he probably should have stopped the Jake Guentzel shot in the third period, the Jake Guentzel shot was the first shot on goal in nearly 40 minutes.
I specifically remember there being some sort of call or some sort of thing that happened where it seemed weird, and then the rails just came off for the Preds for like 5 minutes, and then they settled back down and tried and made a game of it.
Well, so here's what happened. They go down, they score that goal, it gets taken off the board, it's 0-0. The Penguins then score three goals. So it's 3-0 after the first period. Then in the second period, Ryan Ellis scores, makes it 3-1. Then in the third period, there's a power play goal. I think Sisson's got credit for it, made it 3-2. Freddie Gaudreau scores shorthanded right after that to tie it at 3. And all this time, the Penguins did not get a shot on goal. And then Jake Guentzel, with like 3 or 4 minutes left in regulation in game one of the Cup final, he comes down the half wall and fires a wrister top shelf on Pekka to make it 4-3. Bonino adds an empty netter to make it 5-3. That is the Guentzel goal that I'm referring to.
I got my wires crossed. I thought the barrage of Penguins goals happened after the shutout. So you are correct. My apologies on that. I just had the time of those two things switched.
I don't know. It's an interesting debate. We'll never know. But I will take the do over in Game Six, where I feel pretty confident that they would have won that game, as opposed to the do-over in the first period of game one.
Okay, and I will take the game one goal from PK Subban that was disallowed because I feel like it would have set the tone for the rest of the series and really kind of put the Predators, kind of serve notice to the Penguins that the Predators are here and they're ready to play. But instead, they felt like they got robbed, and we know how the rest of the series went, unfortunately. And we also know how Rene's performance was in Pittsburgh the rest of that series as well.
We will agree to disagree.
Absolutely.
Coming up next, we will offer our thoughts on the NHL's rumored plan of the 24-team postseason and how they get the NHL back going here this summer. That's all coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover with you here on this Monday evening. Gover, we haven't had any live hockey to talk about in over 2 months now. I'm sure just like I am, you are having hockey withdrawals here in the last couple months. But it does look like things are progressing in a positive direction. That doesn't guarantee anything in terms of the NHL resuming the 2019-20 season. But Scott Burnside of The Athletic came out this weekend and had an interesting report on what format is being considered right now. And I guess the format that is, I guess, getting the most likes within the return to play committee is having 24 teams return to play. You have 5-game round robin between all those teams, and then they decide from there the 16 teams. And how to decide the 16 teams? They take the points percentage from the existing standings, and they take the points percentage from the 5-game round robin, and they mesh the two, and that would ultimately decide the 16 postseason teams. What are your thoughts on that, I guess you could say, considered format?
I'm a little confused by it, to be honest, and maybe I'm missing something. But for me, I look at the existing standings, and I promise I'm not doing this because I cover the Nashville Predators. I look at the existing standings, and I say, okay, points percentage, right? Nashville right now is sitting in 8th in the West. They have 78 points, as does Vancouver. And Winnipeg, who has 80 points, has played two more games than them. Thus, they would be bounced out. Nashville and Vancouver would get the last two spots. And it's as close to fair as possible. I know why they're doing this 24, why they're trying to force the round peg and square hole here for these 24 teams. It's because you've got teams like Winnipeg who are currently in a playoff spot, but the rest of their season has been robbed from them. And therefore, again, with points percentage, they would come out. They would drop out of the playoffs. So they're trying to appease everybody, and I get that. My issue is, if you're doing a round-robin tournament and you're going to blend the points percentage with the regular the existing standings as of today, how is that going to work? Is Nashville playing three less games than Winnipeg is in the round-robin? And does the math work out for that? And then are they – so I'm just – I know there's a lot of questions here as far as whether they're even going to play these games, let alone how they're actually going to go. But for me, I think they're making it too complicated. I think they need to just accept the fact. And again, I know that Winnipeg would have a serious beef as would other teams, but I think they need to accept the fact that, okay, above any other time in the history of the league, because even when the 1919 Stanley Cup was canceled, it was during the final. So, they didn't award a cup that year, but there were games played in the Stanley Cup final. This particular case, everybody's season got robbed from them. Winnipeg should have won more games while they had a chance. They didn't. Nashville did. Vancouver did. Therefore, they should be in my opinion.
Well, Winnipeg isn't benefiting from the 24-team deal. They would be benefiting if they do expand the field to 20 teams. If you go from 16 to 20, then you are essentially allowing Winnipeg in the dance. When you go to 24, you are allowing a handful of teams that have no business being in the playoff picture, like Chicago and Montreal, and even Arizona to an extent. I mean, here's where I am intrigued by the round robin thought is the last thing that I want to see is for the NHL to pump this up like it's the Stanley Cup playoffs and you have to start with a playoff game out of this hiatus. you are asking for yourself, you're asking for a lot of injuries. You're asking for the product to not be any good with these players. I know they're high class athletes, but they could go 4 months without playing a game, and then you're expecting them to play in the playoffs. Like, having a round robin setup is intriguing to me. I am not a fan of 24 teams because Chicago, Arizona, and Montreal particularly really didn't have realistic playoff chances when the season came to a pause. I do understand that they are trying to accumulate as much revenue as possible, as much lost revenue as possible, and having more teams in the dance means more games, which in turn means more revenue. So I do understand from that point the NHL doing that. I'm just not a fan of the format, but if that means we get hockey back, bring it on. But the round robin is the most intriguing thing out of this to me. And if the official Stanley Cup playoffs out of this is 16 teams, then I will take this. No matter way you slice this pie out of the hiatus, out of the season pause, it's not going to be fair. You can't keep everybody happy. Right. And they just have to come up with whatever the format is, wherever the games are going to be played in the different hub cities, and just roll with it as long as it is healthy enough for the teams and the staffs to partake in a season resumption.
Let me challenge a point you made, Porth. You said you don't think that players will be off for 3 or 4 months and then come back and their first game should be a playoff game. I don't look at it like that, okay? Because I look at it like the regular season is already way too long, and we as in outsiders, like hockey fans and media, et cetera, would love to see games that mean more all the time. I would love to see the game 51 against the last place team that means nothing to anybody. I would love to see that go away. And this is the way to do that. If they come right out of the break, right into the playoffs with the 16 teams based on points percentage of the season that already exists, people are going to be pissed off, and I'm sorry about that, but that to me is the most fair. So for me, and then for the players to come right back and have their first game be a playoff game, that's assuming, or that's with the perception, if you will, that those games are going to be like normal playoff games. They won't be like normal playoff games because the world is different now. They may have a little bit of a training camp, 2-3 week training camp or whatever, leading up to those games. But those games will automatically, right out the gate, mean something. And I'm okay with that. I think every hockey fan should be okay with that. But, again, that's just my counterpoint to you saying, if you're expecting them to be normal, everyday playoff intensity in games, they're not going to be. Because they don't usually come from a 2-3 week hiatus to play them. Like a 1 week hiatus to play them, if that.
Sure. I see where you're going with that. But the 5-game round robin at least knocks the rust off. At the very least, we already have to accept in sports as a whole, not just the NHL, that when sports return, it's not going to look the same. It's not going to feel the same. But having sports back is better than not having sports. And if you can knock the rust off in some form or fashion, the product of the Stanley Cup playoffs are going to be better on the ice than if you just, out of the hiatus, you go from training camp to playoff games. Because then the first round of the playoffs, it's going to be sloppy. The product isn't going to be very good. And, yes, you would still have meaningful games out of the hiatus with the round robin, but at least you're giving these players a chance to build themselves
advance,
up.
A chance to advance? Well, that's what the playoffs are, Porth.
I know, but you're at least giving them an opportunity to build themselves up to what is the official playoff hockey.
I can't argue with that, but I'm just saying that I think at this point players would love to not play meaningless games. Okay, if they're going to play, especially with this new perspective of how the world is now and how every game apparently could be your last because of nothing you do, but because of how the world operates. Mm-hmm. So for me, yeah, cut to the chase. Let's get on with it. First game of the playoffs, July 10th or whatever the day is going to be, let's go. Top 16 teams, as it exists, let's roll.
Got to knock the rust off at some point, and I guess again,
that's what a camp is for. They want 2 to 3 weeks of a camp.
You can't their first games. You cannot replicate playoff games in a training camp.
No, you can't. But we're not talking about traditional playoff games. We're talking about any games at all. And you don't want to have. We talk all the time, Horn. I know we're running out of time. We talk all the time about how the NFL preseason games are meaningless. Just get to the regular season. If you have a round robin tournament, they're not meaningless because you're trying to get into the playoffs. But again, that's the type of playoff game. So either way you look at it, it's playoff hockey. Now, it may not be how you remember playoff hockey, but it is a form of playoff hockey because the more you win, the more the easier your chance to advance is. And if you don't win, you're out. So it's playoff hockey anyway. So you might as well just stick with the 16 and go.
Gover, we are out of time. And it's been real. And it's been nice, but it hasn't been real nice.
Shout out to Mark Willoughby.
Gover, hope you and the fam are doing well through this quarantine. Good to hear your voice, and we will hopefully be talking again soon about real hockey.
Thanks, buddy. I really hope we are.
That will do it for Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio, and keep it locked on Slapshot Radio as former Predators coach and current Islanders coach Barry Trotz is scheduled to join them. That's all coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.